This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, in top news, Obamacare struck down by a federal district judge here in Texas. We'll also hear about prospective speaker Dennis Bonin meeting with conservatives out in the Piney Woods. And we'll hear about a grassroots race for mayor in West Texas. I learned what a sod poodle is. In our interview, we talked to Trey Traynor, President Trump's pending appointee to the Federal Elections Commission, about what the Democrats are doing to radicalize that agency. And Jacob Asmussen tells us a tale of two cities in this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary. Welcome back, friends and neighbors, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. You can find me on Twitter at TweetTonyMac. Also follow Texas Scorecard at Texas Scorecard at Empower Texans. You can check out the new website, www.texasscorecard.com. Lots of articles going up there on a daily basis. To get started with this week's top news, I've got Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility in the studio. Big story, a federal judge here in Texas striking down Obamacare is unconstitutional. Tell us a little bit about it.
That's right, Tony. U.S. District Court Judge Reed O'Connor ruled that Obamacare was unconstitutional, largely because the individual mandate was unconstitutional. He ruled that he could not sever that from the underlying bill, and so he had to scrap the entire bill, which is really a kind of really interesting story.
Yeah, so this is a lawsuit brought by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, along with 19 other states, Texas Public Policy Foundation involved with it as well. So kind of this coalition bringing a second lawsuit. And you may remember, you think back, listeners go, wait a second, there was some litigation about this. I remember something in the news. Yes. So in 2012, the Supreme Court upholds Obamacare saying, the individual mandate is a tax. Well, when Republicans get into office, they pass the tax cut bill and they say, we're going to zero out the tax. And essentially that cut the leg out that Obamacare was standing on.
Right, and that's what Ken Paxton and these other states' attorneys general used to attack the law in this court, and were able to successfully win an argument with this judge to strike down the law. Now, obviously, it's going to go out on appeal. You've got Democrat states' attorney general. You've got, once Nancy Pelosi takes control of the U.S. House, the House saying that it's going to intervene. I think we're going to see a very kind of interesting legal saga here. But, you know, kudos to Ken Paxton for leading the charge.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Interesting to look at kind of some of the reactions out there. Obviously, the left very upset that this is that this has happened. This is a hallmark of the Obama administration, healthcare mandate bill. But you're seeing conservatives, a lot of rejoicing, but a little bit of hand-wringing. It's really weird. Some hand-wringing on the side, we're afraid we're not going to ultimately win. And I really don't think those arguments are very compelling. If you look at it, they're basically saying, the legislature and the Congress got rid of the tax, and so they've kind of re-upped the bill. They've re-endorsed the legislation. I really don't think that that dog hunts.
Well, right, Tony. If you read the Wall Street Journal editorial board's kind of take on this issue, it seems like they're kind of wringing their hands and they're upset. They seem to be blaming Ken Paxton for re-injecting the issue of pre-existing condition into the news sphere. But Ken Paxton was doing his duty for the citizens of Texas, and so were these other states' attorney general. And this is a debate that the people of America absolutely need to have, and one that needs to make its way through the court system.
Yeah.
And the encouraging thing is right here in the state of Texas, you're seeing Governor Greg Abbott come out and lead and saying that Texas will lead the way on putting forward an Obamacare alternative. This, of course, is something that Republicans in Congress failed to do, deciding instead only for the skinny repeal, if we think back to last summer. And I think it'd be very encouraging to see Greg Abbott and the Republican legislature here in Texas adopt some pro-free market, pro-individual health care reforms that really do more to provide better care at a lower cost to average citizens.
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity as we head into the legislative session. People should be talking to their leaders and saying, hey, we've got a shot here. Let's do something here in Texas. We're a huge portion of the health care market, of course, and could regulate things our way in a free way. And so not a free way like the road, but in a freedom kind of way. So appreciate your reporting on that, Kerry, and I'm sure we'll keep an eye on it.
Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's turn to Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Brandon, you took a trip out to the Piney Woods for an event with Representative Dennis Bonin, likely next Speaker of the Texas House, and some conservative reps. Pretty interesting.
Yes, you had State Representatives Matt Schaefer and Cole Hefner, two State House reps out there in East Texas, conservative guys, hosting the presumptive next Speaker of the House, Dennis Bond and Tyler.
Yeah, so this is kind of like a town hall event where the community came together, kind of a joint event between these representatives.
Yes, you had these two representatives inviting Bond in. In fact, Representative Schaefer said when he was talking to Bond, when he first announced and was kind of talking about his bid for the speakership, said, well, you know, are you going to be the kind of speaker that's going to come out to Tyler and visit with my constituents? And Bonin making good on that promise. So he came out, he shook hands, talked to folks one-on-one, answered questions, and then had an opportunity to speak for about 10 minutes or so to the crowd.
Yeah, no, you know, I want to talk a little bit about some of the issues that he touched on, but, you know, the significance of this really shouldn't be missed. I mean, you've had Joe Strauss, the speaker for the last decade, has been completely hostile to conservatives. You almost can't imagine Joe Strauss deciding, hey, let's go just talk to Matt Schaefer's constituents in Tyler. I mean, that would never happen. Here we've got an incoming speaker saying, hey, I want to do a joint event with these very conservative members.
Exactly. I mean, Representative Matt Schaefer, of course, the chair of the Texas House Freedom Caucus.
Yeah. And so, Representative Bonin touching a little bit on some of the issues that he wants to focus on in the legislative session. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, a little bit light on details, but he did mention that after talking to a number of members, and he had mentioned this actually the day that he had kind of announced his run and that he had locked it up, was that school finance legislation was what he has been hearing the most about from members across the state.
Yeah, and so what is, I mean, does he have a plan? They kind of asked him about that.
Well, that's interesting. So he says a lot of folks are asking him, you know, hey, he's like, hey, what is your plan? He says, I don't have to have a plan. In fact, it's nice being the speaker. I don't have to have a plan because I can let the members decide what that plan is, and we'll let the process play itself through. Big departure from the type of leadership we saw from Speaker Strauss.
Yeah, under Strauss, you had a lot of direct command and control of what would happen from a policy standpoint. Here you're seeing a speaker at least saying that he's going to let the members drive the process forward. You had an opportunity to ask about property tax reform.
I did. And so when we were talking about school finance reform, I asked Speaker Bonin afterwards, or Presumptive Speaker Bonin, if property tax reform would be a part of that. And he said he sees the two. He doesn't know if it'll be one bill or separate bills, but he sees the two as intricately linked, and that property tax reform and relief, an important distinction, should both be a part of the discussion on school finance. Because, as he put it, Texans desperately deserve some relief in their property tax situation.
Now let's turn and head out to West Texas and talk with Lauren Malier with the West Texas Bureau. We've got a new grassroots candidate running for mayor of Amarillo. A pretty exciting race brewing out there.
Certainly. Hey, Tony. An activist in Amarillo recently announced her intent to run against the current mayor of Amarillo, Ginger Nelson. The activist's name is Claudette Smith. So she is supposedly one of many who may soon file to run against Ginger Nelson.
Yeah, so Claudette Smith, kind of famous out there as being very involved, grassroots activist who goes to city council meetings, is involved in those things. But big thing, she filed a lawsuit recently. I remember you were covering this, filed a lawsuit seeking an injunction to prevent a taxpayer-funded stadium from being built there in Amarillo. And is the team name the Sod Poodles?
Yes, unfortunately, you're right. It's the Sod Poodles. Their nickname is the Soddies. Caused a little controversy among the community. They weren't too happy, but that is the name that they're going to keep.
Yeah, so tell us about this lawsuit that Claudette Smith filed, and I'm sure this will be an issue in the campaign.
Yeah, because she's actually said she's not going to drop this lawsuit, but she filed a petition in 2018 that alleges the city of Amarillo and their local economic development corporation failed to hold a required election to approve the land swap associated with the ballpark. So that's kind of the issue in a nutshell. She's still seeking that injunction, and she's also actually filed a lawsuit against the city for violating the Texas Open Meetings Act. So there's two kind of in motion right now.
Yeah, so she's been regularly active trying to hold local government accountable. Now you've got this race here against incumbent Mayor Ginger Nelson. She was in the news over this clapping ban. Tell us about what happened with that.
Yes, that was a pretty big controversy surrounding her in 2018 as well, made statewide news. Pretty much City Hall has a clapping ban during their city council meetings, and a gentleman spoke during open forum. Numerous people clapped.
Naturally. Yeah, you like what you hear, you clap.
Yep, and she singled out actually an activist named Kit Billups. who ended up being escorted out of the meeting and charged and arrested with disruption of a meeting.
Oh, well, for clapping in the meeting.
For clapping.
Wow. Well, I think it'll be really interesting to follow what goes on there with Claudette Smith taking on Ginger Nelson. When's the election?
It's in May, municipal election in May.
Okay, well, appreciate you covering it, and thanks for keeping an eye on things out there.
Certainly. Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week Austin election law attorney Trey Traynor, President Trump's pending appointee to the Federal Elections Commission. Thanks for coming in and joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Tony. Always good to be back.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, I wanted to have you in and talk about a story that's been in the news recently. The Democrats are making some noise, certainly signaling that they want to put a renewed focus on the FEC. And I wanted to kind of ask it: what does that mean? You know, what are they wanting to do, and what are some of the dangers of that? Sure. To citizens who are engaged in the election process? And then maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the reforms that maybe aren't being done out
sure.
there. But let's start with this. Most folks maybe don't know FEC, FCC, SEC. There's all these three-letter alphabet soup of agencies. What is your pending to be appointed to the FEC by the president? What is the FEC?
Sure. So the FEC is the Federal Elections Commission. It's an independent executive agency. It's a bipartisan. It's made up of three Republican appointees and three Democrat appointees. And it has oversight over campaign finance issues for federal candidates, presidential candidates, members of Congress, those in the United States Senate. All will do regular campaign finance filings for how much money they raise, and they're responsible for enforcing that and giving some guidance. They also have manage the presidential election fund. So it's it's a completely independent agency. It's difficult to get people on the commission. It's obviously a highly specialized area, focusing on just one small portion of federal law.
There's not that many, on the Republican side, it's top-end Republican election lawyers. It's like you can meet in a small room, right? And the Democrats, it's maybe a slightly larger small room.
It's
just kind of the way it is.
Very small, and there's limitations on serving past one term. Now, everybody that's on the commission currently, they're only, even though there are six members, they're only four members on the commission currently, and everyone on the commission is a holdover, and there's a statutory prohibition on reappointing anyone to the commission, so you can only serve there one time. So it makes it difficult. The way the process, the vetting process is very thorough by the White House for these individuals. And obviously trying to, even though the president has to appoint, he has to appoint a Democrat that I would be paired with in my nomination process. So, it's difficult to find that person, do the vetting, somebody that'll go through the confirmation process.
Yeah, I mean, you went through, you were appointed, like a year ago now at this point.
About 14 months.
Yeah, and is still pending. I know some of the hang-up there has been trying to find Democrats to appoint, and it almost appears to me, it wouldn't be really a surprise to people, that you have the Democrats kind of being uncooperative with the president in terms of getting an appointee to put forward and put on this thing.
Yeah, I really haven't got any detailed information on that. I know they're actively searching for someone to pair me up with to be on the commission. It's a difficult commission to work with, again, because it's highly specialized. And, you're asking Congress to look at and appoint and approve people who are going to have oversight over them.
Yeah.
So anytime you're doing that, it makes it difficult for Congress to act.
Well, let's make clear something here just so that listeners out there understand. Yes, they do have oversight over candidates and legislators and all of that. But, you know, you and I as individual citizens interact with these laws whenever we go out and engage in the political process. There are ways that you go out, you know, I was meeting at a Republican women's club, and we were talking about, they wanted to do a pro Ted Cruz event. It's a Republican women's club, and they were convinced that they could not, you know, hold some pro Ted Cruz signs at the county fair because that was going to put them askew of federal law, which was not true. But it's really disturbing to me as I was there. I was like, these people are self-silencing because of a fear of federal regulations.
Well, you know, and the federal regulations are far-reaching in the Federal Campaign Finance Act. You know, it regulates all forms of political speech. And that's one of the unfortunate things about it is that individuals actually sit back and think, you know, am I running afoul of federal law before I engage in my First Amendment right to actively support a candidate or oppose a candidate for public office? That's one of the areas I think that needs to be closely looked at and understood. And we see this renewed effort with the Democrats taking control of the House. We've seen reports that they want to conduct some oversight hearings with the Federal Elections Commission. It's been a long time since there's been any sort of oversight hearing for the Federal Elections Commission. I think it's important for Congress to exercise their oversight role, and I think it's good to have a conversation about what is the status of campaign finance law in the country right now, and is it having a chilling effect on speech?
Yeah, I mean, I think oversight and having that conversation, what impact is this having on the individual citizen, sounds great. But, you know, we were talking about this story the other day, the Democrats saying, well, we want to put a renewed focus on it. What are some of the dangerous things that could be going on there? I know that there have been efforts to regulate, you know, obviously a lot of efforts to regulate social media, regulate people's comments. You know, if I go off and say a vote, I tell you to vote for President Trump on Twitter, you know, do I have to go register a federal political committee, you know, or do I have to file some form
or
something like that?
That is the question and the conversation that needs to be had right now is where does social media come into play? You know, we've seen with the changes just internally that Facebook and Twitter have had with buying and purchasing ads supporting and opposing candidates and issues. They've put internally some blocks that, in my opinion, have a chilling effect on their own. Now, of course, they're a private company. Can do what they want, but there are bills in Congress that are meant to address that, and so I think that's part of what the conversation that'll be had. What is the appropriate level of regulation? You know, obviously none of us want any nefarious actors participating in the political process. No foreign entities participating in the political process.
Right.
But I think there are common sense ways to go about doing that without, you know, and I think first and foremost we have to be concerned with the First Amendment rights of citizens. We cannot do anything to trample on those rights.
Real easy to say, look, we're really out here just trying to silence the Russians,
right.
And you silence, you know, 300 million Americans
right.
who want to be engaged right. and you interfere with their rights. So I wanted to turn a little bit and talk about some election integrity issues that have been going on. You know, you've got the Democrats now in the House. They're wanting to put a renewed focus on the FEC. They want to do things with that. It could easily be a lot more speech regulation of everyday citizens, and that's a real problem. What you don't see, and it's really kind of disturbing, is you would think there would be a bipartisan agreement about election integrity. We want to have clean voter rolls. We want to ensure that people who are supposed to be voting are voting, and that people who are not supposed to be voting are not voting, that we don't have non-citizens voting, that we don't have people voting twice, that we don't have people voting in states they don't live in, that we don't have illegal aliens voting, that we don't have what have you, you know, any kind of situation like that. And you've seen a lot of opposition from the Democrats to President Trump's election integrity panel, his effort. And then we were talking about this. There's a problem we just saw in Florida with this recount,
sure.
Where you had the Democrats wanting to do whatever they could do to get votes that benefited them counted, you know, and setting precedent on that.
Well, you know, I had the opportunity to go down and work as an attorney in the Palm Beach County recount. And, you know, election integrity is probably the most important issue that we have. And the things that are going on right now, I don't think that there is bipartisan support for election integrity issues. You know, there were blatant attempts to have votes that were improperly cast, illegally cast, counted in Florida. You know, saw that firsthand. And with the president's renewed focus on this, I hope it's an issue that we can address before the 2020 election. But
I mean, it seemed they were kind of openly discussing, look, hey, we're down here and we're involved in this recount because we know that Florida is going to be a battleground in 2020, and we want to win this state. It's a critical part of either side's strategy to winning the presidency in 2020. So we're kind of testing the waters.
Absolutely.
So to speak.
Absolutely.
It wasn't about this election. It really is about the next
legal battle. Right. If you look at the legal filings that were made in Florida, I mean, obviously they had to do with the election, the 2018 Senate and gubernatorial election there. But some of the claims that were made, I think, are really trial balloons for the 2020 election. Let's find which judges, let's find which arguments work so that when Florida is a battleground in 2020, we know exactly where to go and what arguments to make. And I think that's exactly what was going, or at least part of what was going on.
Could have gotten a recount and flipped the vote. They would have loved to do that.
Absolutely.
But the margins were pretty wide, and it had that feel of here we're testing the waters and exploring some things for the future there. You know, this isn't something that's contained just to Florida. You know, here in Texas, there are some issues of our own.
Oh yeah,
related election integrity.
I'll tell you one of the most important issues that we have in Texas is the Secretary of State's office here really needs to do a thorough scrubbing of the voter rolls in the state of Texas. I mean, there are provisions of state law which are not being complied with right now to have the voter rolls checked against other states to see if people are registered in two states, to see if people are registered in two different counties, to make sure that we, you know, it's one person, one vote, and make sure that that's what we have going on. I don't think the Secretary of State's office is doing that. I think we know that there are, you know, well over 100,000 people that shouldn't be on the voting rolls in the state of Texas that need to be taken off, and they need to aggressively pursue removing people who should not be on the voter rolls from being there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think there are some reform. I guess ultimately, listeners out there need to talk. Call the Secretary of State's office. Call the governor's office. You know, say, you know, the governor appoints the Secretary of State. Tell them, hey, we need to be taking this seriously. You've seen the governor out talking about, you know, he'll tweet occasionally and stuff. Say, look, we're going to go after election fraud very aggressively, and that's great, and I believe that. But here are some relatively clerical things that maybe aren't being taken seriously.
I mean, this should not be an issue that's being addressed by the Attorney General's office on the back end after election fraud has happened. And Ken Paxton's done a good job of doing that. We've seen some prosecutions and some convictions come from money that's been put into the Attorney General's office. But really, these are issues that should be addressed on the front end so that you don't have illegal votes being included in the ballot box. Because at the end of the day, all that does is cancel out a valid vote for a citizen who, you know, legally cast their vote.
So. Yeah, it's unfair to them. We're running out of time, but as we wrap up here, when can we expect the final the trade trainer to the FEC confirmation hearings? Is this anytime in the near future?
My hope is that it happens sometime in the near future, probably here in the early part of 2019.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. It'll be something to watch, and it'll be interesting to see the questions that are asked and what take Republicans versus Democrats take. What they, I guess, expect you to do in that job. So good luck with that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. We'll certainly be watching it and appreciate you joining us.
Always good to be on.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program sponsored by Empower Texans? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can compete with your friends and fellow activists across the state by watching a live leaderboard, as well as seeing what others are doing across the great state of Texas. You can even earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearers logo on it, or a multitude of other prizes. For example, we just gave away an awesome custom Glock handgun. With the Texas Torchbearers program, it's even easier to make a difference. Everyone should sign up today at TexasTorchbearers.com. That's TexasTorchbearers with an S.com.
It's a tale of two cities. Jacob Asmussen has this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary.
Is it possible for hardworking Texans in big cities like Austin and Dallas to soon be living in a kind of tragic caste system? With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Jacob Asmussen. Now, believe it or not, the harsh reality of only the elite wealthy having access to a prosperous life, of no opportunity for the service class and the destitute, is actually looming close for many Texans. But citizens have a valuable chance right now to see where many of their local governments are currently taking them and take action before it's too late. This is the tale of two cities, Austin and really all the metropolitan cities in Texas, and San Francisco. Now, it's no secret that Austinites are currently facing an affordability crisis. Skyrocketing costs of living, insufficient wages, and suffocating taxes have forced many to move out of the city. Small businesses have closed, affordable housing is dwindling, homelessness is increasing. So how will the city try to end the crisis? Well, this is where San Francisco's story comes in, and where Austinites should pay close attention. San Francisco is currently experiencing a similar crisis, but far worse. A one-bedroom apartment runs an average of $3,300 a month. The median home price is a staggering $1.6 million. Good luck with that if you're a teacher or mechanic or anyone not in a high-paying tech job. Now, the city also, unsurprisingly, has one of their worst homeless problems in the nation. The streets downtown have become littered with used needles, trash, and now human feces, which has compelled the mayor to initiate a poop patrol to help clean up the nasty streets. Now, San Francisco city officials have already taken the one action they thought would repair their disaster, spending massive amounts of taxpayer money. I mean, this year alone, they'll spend over $300 million on homelessness. That's roughly $37,000 for each homeless person in the city. Add that on top of the $500 million the city has spent on homelessness in just the last 2 years. So yet, shockingly, the problems have only worsened. A citywide survey last year showed the number of homeless people has remained the same. And meanwhile, the housing crisis has gotten even worse. All of the record government spending hasn't helped the working class or homeless, but has instead fanned their disaster into raging flames. John Daniel Davidson, senior correspondent for The Federalist, summed up the city's catastrophic situation. He said, "It's not just homeless encampments that bedevil San Francisco, but also the flight of the middle class and the emergence of a kind of citywide caste system, the wealthy, the service class, and the destitute. In some ways, San Francisco is becoming something progressives are supposed to hate, a private club for the super rich." Now, in large part, the city's housing crisis, and consequently the homeless crisis, trace their roots back to City Hall itself. For decades, San Francisco officials and voters have built barriers to new construction, brick by brick, through expensive fees and regulations, and even outright rejection of new housing. As the population increased, housing did not. Prices shot up for the scarce few places left to live, and the problem spiraled out of control from there. But the disaster ultimately stemmed from the city suffocating construction. And the worst part? The city officials, caught up spending truckloads of taxpayer money trying to fix every problem, neglected to look in the mirror and see that it was their own rules that rigged the housing market against the working class. Now we return to Austin. How is the city council currently trying to end our own affordability crisis? Well, the Austin City Council has chosen to follow the same provenly disastrous path as San Francisco. Take more money from residents and spend it, rather than fix their own rules that are causing the crisis in the first place. There's still time for Austin to turn back. However, if the City Council continues walking down this road, the crisis in Texas's capital city will unfortunately not come to an end. It will just be getting started, and Austin's story will have the same end as San Francisco's. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Jacob Asmussen.
Well, that's the end of the program. It's all I've got for you this week. We will be back next week with a fresh program. No breaks for us here at the 1836 Studios. Beyond that, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening this year, and I wish you and your families a Merry Christmas.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.